The Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien. Chapter 1. An Unexpected Party. In a hole in the ground there lived a hobbit. Not a nasty, dirty, wet hole filled with the ends of worms and an oozy smell, nor yet a dry, bare, sandy hole with nothing in it to sit down on or eat. It was a hobbit hole, and that means comfort. It had a perfectly round door, like a porthole, painted green, with a shiny yellow brass knob in the exact middle. The door opened onto a tube-shaped hall like a tunnel, a very comfortable tunnel without smoke, with panelled walls and floors tiled and carpeted, provided with polished chairs and lots of pegs for hats and coats. The hobbit was fond of visitors. The tunnel wound on and on, going fairly, but not quite straight, into the side of the hill. The hill, as all the people for many miles around called it. And many little round doors opened out of it, first on one side and then on another. No going upstairs for the hobbit. Bedrooms, bathrooms, cellars, pantries, lots of these. Wardrobes, he had a whole room devoted to clothes. Kitchens, dining rooms, all were on the same floor and indeed on the same passage. The best rooms were all on the left-hand side, going in, for these were the only ones to have windows, deep set round windows looking over his garden and meadows beyond, sloping down to the river. This hobbit was a very well-to-do hobbit, and his name was Baggins. The Bagginses have lived in the neighbourhood of the hill for time out of mind, and people considered them very respectable, not only because of them being rich, but also because they had never had any adventures or did anything unexpected. You could tell what a Baggins would say on any question without the bother of asking him. This is a story of how a Baggins had an adventure and found himself doing and saying things altogether unexpected. He may have lost the neighbour's respect, but he gained. Well, you will see whether he gained anything in the end. The mother of our particular hobbit... What is a hobbit? I suppose hobbits need some description nowadays, since they have become rare and shy of the big people, as they call us. They are, or were, a little people, about half our height and smaller than the bearded dwarves. Hobbits have no beards. There is little or no magic about them except the ordinary everyday sort which helps them to disappear quietly and quickly when large, stupid folk like you and me come blundering along, making a noise like elephants which they can hear a mile off. They are inclined to be fat in the stomach. They dress in bright colours, chiefly green and yellow. They wear no shoes because their feet grow natural leathery soles and thick, warm brown hair, like the stuff on their heads, which is curly. They have long, clever brown fingers, good-natured faces, and laugh deep, fruity laughs, especially after dinner, which they have twice a day when they can get it. Now you know enough to go on with. As I was saying, the mother of this hobbit, Bilbo Baggins, that is, was the famous Belladonna Took, one of the three remarkable daughters of the old Took, head of the hobbits who lived across the water, the small river that ran at the foot of the hill. It was often said, in other families, that long ago one of the Took ancestors must have taken a fairy wife. That was, of course, absurd, but certainly there was still something not entirely hobbit-like about them, and once in a while members of the Took clan would go and have adventures. They discreetly disappeared, and the family hushed it up. But the fact remained that the Tooks were not as respectable as the Bagginses, though they were undoubtedly richer. Not that Belladonna Took ever had any adventures after she became Mrs. Bungo Baggins. Bungo, that was Bilbo's father, built the most luxurious hobbit hole for her, and partly with her money, that was to be found ever under the hill or over the hill or across the water, and there they remained to the end of their days. Still, it is probable that Bilbo, her only son, although he looked and behaved exactly like a second edition of his solid and comfortable father, got something a bit queer in his makeup from the Took side. Something that only waited for a chance to come out. The chance never arrived until Bilbo Baggins was grown up, being about 50 years old or so, and living in the beautiful hobbit hole built by his father, which I have just described for you, until he had in fact apparently settled down immovably. By some curious chance, one morning long ago, in the quiet of the world, when there was less noise and more green, and the hobbits were still numerous and prosperous, and Bilbo Baggins was standing at his door after breakfast, smoking an enormous long wooden pipe that reached nearly down to his woolly toes, neatly brushed, Gandalf came by. Gandalf! If you had heard only a quarter of what I have heard about him, and I have only heard very little of all there is to hear, you would be prepared for any sort of remarkable tale. Tales and adventures sprouted up all over the place wherever he went, in the most extraordinary fashion. He had not been down that way, under the hill, for ages and ages, not since his friend the old Took died, in fact, and the hobbits had almost forgotten what he looked like. He had been away over the hill and across the water, on businesses of his own, since they were all small hobbit boys and hobbit girls. All that the unsuspecting Bilbo saw that morning was an old man with a staff. He had a tall, pointed blue hat, a long grey cloak, a silver scarf over which his long white beard hung down below his waist, and immense black boots. "Good morning," said Bilbo, and he meant it. The sun was shining and the grass was very green. But Gandalf looked at him from under long, bushy eyebrows that stuck out further than the brim of his shady hat. "What do you mean?" he said. "Do you wish me a good morning, or mean that it is a good morning whether I want it or not, or that you feel good this morning, or that it is a good morning to be good on?"
"All of them at once," said Bilbo, "and a very fine morning for a pipe of tobacco out of doors into the bargain. If you have a pipe about you, sit down and have a fill of mine. There's no hurry. We have all the day before us." Then Bilbo sat down on a seat by his door, crossed his legs, and blew out a beautiful grey ring of smoke that sailed up into the air without breaking and floated away over the hill.
"Very pretty," said Gandalf. "But I have no time to blow smoke rings this morning. I am looking for someone to share in an adventure that I am arranging, and it's very difficult to find anyone."
"I should think so, in these parts. We are plain, quiet folk, and I have no use for adventures. Nasty, disturbing, uncomfortable things make you late for dinner. I can't think what anybody sees in them," said our Mr. Baggins, and stuck one thumb behind his braces and blew out another even bigger smoke ring. Then he took out his morning letters and began to read, pretending to take no more notice of the old man. He had decided that he was not quite his sort and wanted him to go away. But the old man did not move. He stood leaning on his stick and gazing at the hobbit without saying anything, till Bilbo got quite uncomfortable and even a little cross.
"Good morning," he said at last. "We don't want any adventures here, thank you. You might try over the hill or across the water."
By this, he meant that the conversation was at an end.
"What a lot of things you do use good morning for," said Gandalf. "Now you mean that you want to get rid of me, and that it won't be good till I move off."
"Not at all, not at all, my dear sir. Let me see. I don't think I know your name."
"Yes, yes, my dear sir, and I do know your name, Mr. Bilbo Baggins, and you do know my name, though you don't remember that I belong to it. I am Gandalf, and Gandalf means me. To think that I should have lived to be good morninged by Belladonna Took's son, as if I was selling buttons at the door."
"Gandalf! Gandalf! Good gracious me! Not the wandering wizard that gave old Took a pair of magic diamond studs that fastened themselves and never came undone until ordered? Not the fellow who used to tell such wonderful tales at parties about dragons and goblins and giants and the rescue of princesses and the unexpected luck of widows' sons? Not the man that used to make such particularly excellent fireworks? I remember those. Old Took used to have them on Midsummer's Eve. Splendid! They used to go up like great lilies and snapdragons and laburnums of fire and hang in the twilight all evening."
You will notice already that Mr. Baggins was not quite so prosy as he liked to believe,
also that he was very fond of flowers. "Dear me," he went on, "not the Gandalf who was responsible for so many quiet lads and lasses going off into the blue for mad adventures. Anything from climbing trees to visiting elves, or sailing in ships, sailing to other shores. Bless me, life used to be quite inter... I mean, you used to upset things badly in these parts once upon a time. I beg your pardon, but I had no idea you were still in business."
"Where else should I be?" said the wizard. "All the same, I am pleased to find you remember something about me. You seem to remember my fireworks kindly at any rate, and that is not without hope. Indeed, your old grandfather took sake, and for the sake of poor Belladonna, I will give you what you asked for."
I beg your pardon? I haven't asked for anything."
"Yes, yes, you have, twice now. My pardon, I give it to you. In fact, I will go as far as to send you to this adventure. Very amusing for me, very good for you, and profitable too, very likely, if you ever get over it."
"Sorry, I don't want any adventures, thank you. Not today. Good morning. But please come to tea, any time you like. Why not tomorrow? Come tomorrow. Goodbye."
With that, the hobbit turned and scuttled inside his round green door and shut it as quickly as he dared, not to seem rude. Wizards are, after all, wizards.
"What on earth did I ask him to tea for?" he said to himself as he went to the pantry. He had only just had breakfast, but he thought a cake or two and a drink of something would do him good after his fright.
Gandalf, in the meantime, was still standing outside the door and laughing long but quietly. After a while, he stepped up and, with the spike on his staff, scratched a queer sign on the hobbit's beautiful green front door. Then he strode away, just about the time when Bilbo was finishing his second cake and beginning to think that he had escaped adventures very well. The next day he had almost forgotten about Gandalf. He did not remember things very well unless he put them down on his engagement tablet, like this: "Gandalf Tea, Wednesday." Yesterday he had been too flustered to do anything of the kind. Just before tea time, there came a tremendous ring on the front door bell, and then he remembered. He rushed and put on the kettle and put out another cup and saucer and an extra cake or two and ran to the door. "I'm so sorry to keep you waiting," he was going to say when he saw that it was not Gandalf at all. It was a dwarf with a blue beard tucked into a golden belt and very bright eyes under his dark green hood. As soon as the door was opened, he pushed inside, just as if he'd been expected. He hung his hooded cloak on the nearest peg and,
"Dwarling at your service," he said with a low bow.
"Bilbo Baggins at yours," said the hobbit, too surprised to ask any questions for the moment. When the silence that followed had become uncomfortable, he added, "I am just about to take tea. Pray come and have some with me." A little stiff, perhaps, but he meant it kindly. "And what would you do if an uninvited dwarf came and hung his things up in your hall without a word of explanation?" They had not been at table long. In fact, they had hardly reached the third cake, when there came another, even louder ring at the bell. "Excuse me," said the hobbit, and off he went to the door.
"So, you've got here at last."
That was what he was going to say to Gandalf this time, but it was not Gandalf. Instead, there was a very odd-looking dwarf on the step, with a white beard and a scarlet hood, and he too hopped inside as soon as the door was open, just as if he had been invited.
"Ah, I see they've begun to arrive already," he said when he caught sight of Dwalin's green hood hanging up.
He hung his red one next to it, and,
"Balin at your service," he said, with his hand on his breast.
"Thank you," said Bilbo with a gasp. It was not the correct thing to say, but "they have begun to arrive" had flustered him badly. He liked visitors, but he liked to know them before they arrived, and he preferred to ask them himself. He had a horrible thought that the cakes might run short, and then he, as the host, he knew his duty and stuck to it however painful, he might have to go without.
"Come along in and have some tea," he managed to say after taking a deep breath. "A little beer would suit me better if it's all the same to you, my good sir," said Balin with the white beard. "But I don't mind some cake, seed cake if you have any."
"Lots," Bilbo found himself answering to his surprise, and he found himself scuttling off, too, to the cellar to fill a pint beer mug, and then to a pantry to fetch two beautiful round seed cakes, which he had baked that afternoon for his after-supper morsel. When he got back, Barlin and Dwalin were talking at the table like old friends. As a matter of fact, they were brothers. Bilbo plumped down the beer and the cake in front of them, when a loud ring came at the bell again, and then another ring. Gandalf for certain this time, he thought, as he puffed along the passage. But it was not. It was two more dwarves, both with blue hoods, silver belts, and yellow beards, and each of them carried a bag of tools and a spade. In they hopped, as soon as the door began to open. Bilbo was hardly surprised at all. "What can I do for you, my dwarves?" he said. "Killy at your service," said one. "And Filly," added the other. And they both swept off their blue hoods and bowed. "At yours and your family's," replied Bilbo, remembering his manners this time. Dwalin and Barlin here already, I see," said Killy. "Let us join the throng." "Throng?" thought Mr. Baggins. "I don't like the sound of that. I really must sit down for a minute and collect my wits and have a drink." He had only just had a sip, in the corner while the four dwarves sat round the table and talked about mines and gold and troubles with goblins and the depredations of dragons and lots of other things which he did not understand and did not want to, for they sounded much too adventurous, when ding-dong-a-ling-dong, his bell rang again, as if some naughty little hobbit boy was trying to pull the handle off. "Someone at the door," he said, blinking. "Some four, I should say, by the sound," said Filly. "Besides, we saw them coming along behind us in the distance." The poor little hobbit sat down in the hall and put his head in his hands and wondered what had happened and what was going to happen and whether they would all stay for supper. Then the bell rang again louder than ever, and he had to run to the door. It was not four at all, it was five. Another dwarf had come along while he was wandering in the hall. He had hardly turned the knob before they were all inside, bowing and saying, "At your service," one after another. Dori, Nori, Ori, Oin and Gloin were their names. And very soon, two purple hoods, a grey hood, a brown hood, and a white hood were hanging on the pegs. And off they marched with their broad hands stuck in their gold and silver belts to join the others. Already it had almost become a throng. Some called for ale, and some for porter, and one for coffee, and all of them for cakes. So the hobbit was kept very busy for a while. A big jug of coffee had just been set in the hearth, the seed cakes were gone, and the dwarves were starting on a round of buttered scones when there came a loud knock. Not a ring, but a hard rat-tat on the beautiful hobbit's green door. Somebody was banging with a stick. Bilbo rushed along the passage, very angry, and altogether bewildered and bewothered. This was the most awkward Wednesday he had ever remembered. He pulled open the door with a jerk, and they all fell in, one on top of the other. More dwarves, four more, and there was Gandalf behind, leaning on his staff and laughing. He had made quite a dent on the beautiful door. He had also, by the way, knocked out the secret mark that he had put there in the morning before. "Carefully, carefully," he said. "It is not like you, Bilbo, to keep friends waiting on the mat and then open the door like a popgun. Let me introduce Biffa, Boffer, Bomber, and especially Thorin." "At your service," said Biffa, Boffer, and Bomber, standing in a row. Then they hung up two yellow hoods and a pale green one, and also a sky blue one with a long silver tassel. This last belonged to Thorin, an enormously important dwarf, in fact no other than the great Thorin Oakenshield himself, who was not at all pleased at falling flat on Bilbo's mat, with Biffa, Boffa, and Bomber on top of him. For one thing, Bomber was immensely fat and heavy. Thorin indeed was very haughty and said nothing about service. But poor Mr. Baggins said he was sorry so many times that at last he grunted, "Pray don't mention it," and stopped frowning. "Now, we are all here," said Gandalf, looking at the row of 13 hoods, the best detachable party hoods, and his own hat hanging on the pegs. "Quite a merry gathering. I hope there is something left for the latecomers to eat and drink. What's that? Tea? No, thank you. A little red wine, I think, for me." "And for me," said Thorin. "And raspberry jam and apple tart," said Biffa. "And mince pie and cheese," said Boffa. "And pork pie and salad," said Bomber. "And more cakes, and ale, and coffee, if you don't mind," called the other dwarves through the door. "Put on a few eggs, there's a good fellow," Gandalf called after him, as the hobbits stumped off to the pantries. "And just bring out the cold chicken and pickles." "Seems to know as much about the inside of my larders as I do myself," thought Mr. Baggins, who was feeling positively flummoxed and was beginning to wonder whether a most wretched adventure had not come right into his house. By the time he had got all the bottles and dishes and knives and forks and glasses and plates and spoons and things piled up on big trays, he was getting very hot and red in the face and annoyed. "Confusticate and be bothered those dwarves," he said aloud. "Why don't they come and lend a hand?" Lo and behold, there stood Balin and Dwalin at the door of the kitchen, and Filly and Killy behind them, and before he could say knife, they had whisked the trays and a couple of small tables into the parlour and set out everything afresh. Gandalf sat at the head of the party with the 13 dwarves all round, and Bilbo sat on a stool at the fireside, nibbling at a biscuit. His appetite was quite taken away, and trying to look as if this was all perfectly ordinary and not in the least an adventure. The dwarves ate and talked, and time got on. At last they pushed their chairs back, and Bilbo made a move to collect the plates and glasses. "I suppose you will all stay to supper," he said, in his politest, unpressing tones.
"Of course," said Thorin. "And after, we shan't get through the business till late, and we must have some music first. Now to clear up."
Thereupon, the 12 dwarves, not Thorin, he was too important and stayed talking to Gandalf, jumped to their feet and made tall piles of all the things. Off they went, not waiting for trays, balancing columns of plates, each with a bottle on the top with one hand, while the hobbit ran after them, almost squeaking with fright. "Please be careful, and please don't trouble, I can manage." But the dwarves only started to sing. "Chip the glasses and crack the plates, blunt the knives and bend the forks. That's what Bilbo Baggins hates. Smash the bottles and burn the corks. Cut the cloth and tread on the fat. Pour the milk on the pantry floor. Leave the bones on the bedroom mat. Splash the wine on every door. Dump the crocks in a boiling bowl. Pound them up with a thumping pole. And when you've finished, if any are whole, send them down the hall to roll. That's what Bilbo Baggins hates. So carefully, carefully with the plates."